Hi, I'm Deborah Lindat, and this is Toxic Free Talk Radio, where we talk about how to thrive in a toxic world and live toxic free. It's Thursday, March 19th, 2015, and today we're going to talk about fermented foods. We've talked about this before, but fermented foods are so important that it's a historical, actually ancient thing to do, to ferment foods, both for to preserve them, but also because they have so many health benefits. So we're going to be talking about what foods that we can be fermenting now. It's something that anybody can do in their home. Even if you live in an apartment, you can ferment foods. It only requires a small amount of space and knowing what you're doing. It's inexpensive. It produces vitamins and probiotics and all kinds of things. So we're going to learn more about fermented foods today, and also how you can start fermenting foods that you have available right now in this season. I know I make pickles in the summertime by fermenting them, not putting them in vinegar, but fermenting them. And but there are things that you can ferment all year long, and we're going to find out more about those today. My guest is Diane Dirks. She's a regular guest, and she addresses problems of daily life with solutions based in nature. She's a certified permaculturist. She's been an organic gardener for 45 years, more than 45 years. And welcome, Diane.
Hi, Deb. Nice talking with you again.
Thank you. Thank you for being here.
Well,
so let's start with, why don't you explain what fermentation is? It's a big word.
Okay. Well, it's the action of exposing certain foods to microorganisms that are found in the air and certain cultures such as lactobacillus. You know, that's found in yogurt like Activia and yeasts which make bread, wine, beer, and sometimes certain molds for cheese making. Some of the familiar things that you would notice were fermented, maybe didn't know they were fermented, but in our diet, there's a lot of things that are fermented. And, you know, we said bread and cheeses and kefir or kefir, both milk and water type, and yogurt. But then some more like traditional things in other cultures, sauerkraut, in Korea, kimchi. Most of the European cultures have beer of some kind or wine. But some of them ferment sausages and use it and meat. And some people ferment hot sauce. And then, of course, pickles, like you mentioned, and then kombucha tea. And, you know, in every culture, they have found out about this because it's a great way to preserve food. So when you put these microorganisms onto a food, what they do is they knock out, they produce some antimicrobial acids which knock out the things which would cause them to rot or putrefy. So right then they become safe, you know. And then it sort of partially pre-processes it, kind of pre-digests it, and then it changes a lot of the aspects of the food, you know, like the cellulose, which is the stringy things, you know, you find in celery and stuff like that. But most vegetables have some cellulose in them, which is mostly not digestible for the body. It's pretty much considered a fiber by the body, but then when it breaks down by the microbes, it actually releases sugars and organic acids that the body really needs. And also many of the nutrients that are locked up in the cells, it breaks the cell walls down in the food. So it's pre-digested, and then the body can really absorb it. So it's one of those things that I should mention, it's fermentation is an anaerobic process, meaning that it works without air. And the funny thing about when food starts to putrefy or mold is it's because it's exposed to the air. So, you know, you make your pickle and you put it on a tight fit. You put a tight fitting lid on your jar. The air can't get in there, so the activities of the microbes are kept from getting air in them, and so they don't putrefy. And then it keeps them for a really long time.
It does. I remember my first experience with fermentation. I didn't even know that's what it was, but my ethnic background is that I'm half British Isles and half Armenian. That I'm actually the Armenian half is 100% Armenian, and so I was exposed to Armenian culture through my grandparents very much. And so one of the things that I was taught as a child was to prepare Armenian foods. And I had this little cookbook that my grandmother gave me, and one of the things that was in it was what was called Armenian pickles. And and so I was trying all these different things, and what was required for Armenian pickles was that you had to buy a crock, a ceramic crock, which my mother bought for me, and then the recipe said to cut up all these different vegetables like carrots and cauliflower and celery and all these things. And then you put it in, and it had the fermentation instructions, and I had to wait 30 days in order for them to ferment. And I took them out, and they were pickles. They were all pickled. And it was just amazing to me that it did that. But I didn't know what I was doing. I just knew that this was a traditional Armenian food from my family.
Isn't it amazing that the technology of that is so similar from culture to culture?
It is. It really is.
Usually they add, when you're making a pickle of some kind, you add salt because that preserves it further, but it also helps to draw the moisture out of the cells, and it helps with the activity of the microbes. It's the same from culture to culture. The only thing that would be slightly different probably is the exact techniques. You know, maybe they use different herbs or flavorings or something, and maybe they use slightly different foods. But it's the same process. It's because microorganisms, this is really wild. In my research, I found out that there's a fine layer of microbes across the whole planet. It covers every surface.
Oh, and that's pretty cool.
You capture those when you expose food, you know, like any kind of vegetables or something. That stuff is on there already. You just have to catch it and give it some incentive to break stuff down. And that's the process of pickle making or fermentation.
So how did you get interested in fermentation?
You know, I have a friend in Alaska who just is kind of a adventuresome soul. And he would travel around. He's a big cat operator, and he did a lot of projects on the Kodiak Islands and stuff. And sometimes those guys for R&R, they would go across the strait to northeastern Russia. And this was many years ago, but after the Iron Curtain came down. And he came back with his stories about these people who were living like, you know, over 100 years old. And not just living, not just kind of like nursing home living, but, you know, running gardens and farms and active people, sometimes 150 years old. And they would drink this stuff that I later found out was kombucha tea. They called it different things, but it was very intriguing to me. And then later, I had some health issues, and I thought, you know, I'm wondering, because of all the things he had told me, and some other people had told me some things about it, too. I had a girlfriend in Florida who grew kombucha tea. Maybe that's what I should start doing, and it really did help. So that was kind of, I've been making kombucha tea for, I don't know, 35 years, something like that. And it really makes you feel good and wonderful, so it's one of those things that's just ongoing interest.
Yeah. Just explain for 30 seconds before we go to break what kombucha tea is for people who don't know.
Okay. It's formed from a mushroom type of microorganism, like a mushroom. And you put tea and water and sugar in, and you let it sit for like a week or two, and it does all these wonderful things to the sugar in the tea. It's yeast. It's a yeast and a bacteria, and in the symbiosis. Anyway, I wrote a book about the subject, so we can talk about that later. But
I'll tell our listeners, we already talked about it. We did a whole show on kombucha tea. So
that's
you can
right.
listen to Diane's show on kombucha tea.
Right.
You can go to toxicfreetalkradio.com and look that up. We need to go to break. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and we're talking today with Diane Dirks about fermented foods, how they help our bodies, and how you can make them at home in this season. We'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Diane Dirks. She's with us every month or so to talk about how we can address problems of daily life with solutions based in nature, one of my favorite subjects. I think that nature has all the answers, and that's been my experience over many years. And
just have to ferret them out.
Yeah, we do. I mean, if you really think about it, we as human beings, if there was no industrial consumer complex, we as human beings just here on the earth, nature provides everything. We don't need that layer of industrialism in order to survive. We've just forgotten that and have forgotten how to do it. And so one of the things I really enjoy doing on this show is bringing back this connection with nature and this wisdom and knowledge about how to connect directly in the natural world in order to get what we need, in order to be healthy and have the things that we need. So, tell us about the benefits of fermented foods.
Well, as I also already mentioned, it pre-digests the food. The thing is that there are actually some processes within the microorganisms which provide greater amounts of vitamins, and it releases minerals that would otherwise just pass through the body. It also provides probiotics, you know, those good beneficial microorganisms.
Those very expensive beneficial microorganisms. I'm not saying that people shouldn't buy them, but I'm just saying that if you want to save money, you can make them yourself by fermenting foods.
Oh, I think it's actually much better because it's alive.
It is. But there's another reason, and that is that there's a greater assortment of microorganisms by fermenting foods than just having, if you buy a probiotic, they grow the strains, specific strains in the lab or wherever they grow them. But when you are fermenting, you're getting that whole wild mixture of whatever is there in your environment is in the food, working away to make it more healthy for you.
Absolutely. There are two other things, though, that are most people don't realize. In the fermentation process, organic acids are formed, which provide many critical compounds and enzymes that the body needs to rebuild tissues. And your favorite subject, detoxify, because it actually, those enzymes and those organic acids actually either nullify or draw out and destroy those harmful things, those toxins, and a lot of also pathogenic, in other words, disease-causing microorganisms that sort of get in there and cause havoc when the balances are destroyed. And that happens quite often, actually, because there are so many toxins in the environment that just break down the beneficial microorganisms in our gut, and that's 85% of your immune system. So, you know, when your immune system is out of balance because it's the good things that are supposed to be in there protecting you are gone, then those toxins invade your body. So it's pretty critical.
It is pretty critical. It is. And this is just one of those things that nature provides for us. All we need to do is know it's there and take it. So also, fermenting foods contribute to food security. How do they do that?
Well, in our modern day, we're kind of dependent on refrigeration and chemicals and stuff to preserve our food, but this is a way that you can preserve it without those chemicals or refrigeration or complicated equipment or technology, really. It's very sustainable. And during times of plenty, by putting away extra food into forms like we talked about, pickles, relishes, fermented vegetables like sauerkraut, or milk products like yogurt, or milk kefir, or longer-lasting cheeses, because food, when it's available during
a season,
Yeah, I mean, there are times in the year when there's lots of food, and there are times in the year where there's hardly any, like winter
right,
stuff.
Right.
So if you preserve things with this long-lasting method, I mean, it can last years. You know, some of those cheeses, you know, they're long. They've been there a long time. That food is available for a long period of time, and it could be protect you against famine or other things which we never, you know, can control. I mean, look at what's happened in the last few years with the planet being topsy-turvy. You know, you just never know when things are going to be a little bit crazy. But the good thing is that you can do it in small quantities. So if you have a garden, you don't have to make 10 tons of something. You can make 2 or 3 jars of something as the year goes by, and then stack it someplace. Like I have a little place in my basement with my little pantry, and it's loaded with stuff. And, you know, that just sits there, and whenever I want to have something, it's just available.
My grandmother had that, too. She had, like, a little root cellar underneath the house, and we had to walk down little steps. It had a little door, and we had to walk down the little steps, and then it was all very cool there underneath the house, even though she lived in the Central Valley of California, where it was very, very hot. It was cool under the house, and she had all these jars of things and foods sitting there. And it was just, I think that that's just a technology and a tradition that we've lost.
I know. I hear this word going around, hoarding. I think somebody is trying to make us think that it's not a good idea to have a buffer, you know, to have extra in case, just in case, you know.
Nature does that. I just want to point this out that, you know, we talk about abundance of things, and nature is extremely abundant. Nature doesn't live on the edge. And I really looked at this at one point, and like nature, if you look at the number of seeds on a strawberry, for example, you know, nature produces abundance so that life can survive. That is a basic principle of nature, that there are many, many, if you look at a tree, that it's going to drop, you know, how many apples, but it only needs one seed out of one apple to reproduce the tree. But you get
which
many.
Which produces tons of apples over its lifetime. I mean, it's
right, right, right. And so it's like nature has designed things to ensure that organisms survive. And one of those things is to make sure that they have enough food. And it's just, yeah. We need to go to break. But when we come back, we'll talk more about fermented foods. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Diane Dierks. And her website, she has a very interesting blog, The Garden Lady of GA, like Georgia, thegardenladyofga.wordpress.com. And you can go to toxicfreetalkradio.com and look at the description of the show and just click right on the link. Might be an easier way to remember that. We'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd. And my guest today is Diane Dierks, who I have on every month because she has so much information about how we can address problems of daily life with solutions based in nature. And I have a new feature on my website now where you can go and see all the back shows from my regular guests, all on a single page so that you can listen to as many of them as you want. Just go to toxicfreetalkradio.com and look where it says, oh, I don't have it right here. Hold on. It says, listen to archive shows on the little sub menu. And, if you just mouse over it, it will list all my regular guests and you'll see Diane Dierks on there. And you can just select that and go to her page and listen to all her back shows, including the show about kombucha tea, which is another fermented food. And, all right. So let's see. Where are we now? So tell us more, Diane, about, how fermented foods help the body detox.
Well, in my book on kombucha tea, one of the things that came up, which just hit me between the eyes like a sledgehammer, was in the liver, it produces this stuff that is called glucuronic acid. And glucuronic acid is already present in the liver, but because we have so much toxicity, it can't produce enough. And what this stuff does is it binds with toxins and metals and pesticides and metabolic toxins and stuff that go through the liver, and that's this particular organic acid, glucuronic acid, grabs onto those things and pulls them away, and they go, then they go down the intestines and out the body.
When I was writing my book, Toxic Free, I wrote about this very process. And the analogy I used is that this is like a little tugboat that takes those molecules. It takes those molecules of toxic things and guides them through the process, just kind of pulls them along through the liver and then out through the intestines and out of your body. And without those tugboats, the process doesn't happen. This is why this is so important. It's so important. Well, and again, nature has provided all of these things for us to keep us healthy, but nature didn't anticipate how many toxic chemicals we were going to be exposed to. And so now the amount we're born with isn't enough, and we have to add more.
Well, mostly people's bodies are overwhelmed with the amount of stuff that they can't process. And so anything that you do that adds to the ability of the body to grab on and eliminate that stuff is really important. So this kombucha tea is one of those things. And as far as I know, it's the only such thing, fermented product, that has that stuff in it. There are many that have of other types of fermented beverages which contain lots of probiotics and that release, you know, the B vitamins and C and all the minerals, calcium, magnesium, phosphorus, and all that. Even some proteins, like, and which bodies can't necessarily digest, especially in the milk products, if they're lactose intolerant, without this breaking down. But the glucuronic acid is just very unique to kombucha tea, so that's pretty hot. But every cell in the body that is supposed to contain glutathione, this is an amino acid, a building block of a protein. And every cell in the body has this, but it doesn't have enough. And one of the things that it happens with fermentation is that it increases the glutathione, which is an anti-aging amino acid. It increases enzymes needed for digestion and detoxification. And so it's so critical to every cell in the body, and we just don't get enough of it. Especially like eating McDonald's and stuff, you know, you need live food for that. And fermentation increases the aliveness of food by many times.
Yes. Yes, we think that, you know, a lettuce leaf growing out in the garden is alive, and it is much more alive than what you get in the supermarket.
But then, no kidding.
Or I should say a cabbage leaf. Actually, it's true of lettuce too, but where I'm going is... I don't know, would you, I've never seen fermented lettuce, but certainly fermented cabbage is sauerkraut. And so the degrees of aliveness would be pretty much zero in the supermarket and very alive in the garden and super alive in the sauerkraut.
Right. Can you imagine how long some of that food's been sitting in a warehouse? You know, every day it sits there, a percentage of its aliveness goes away.
Yeah, and let me I just want to interject something about the warehouse. You know, probably any person could go to any supermarket or even a natural food store right now and buy an apple. But apples are a seasonal fruit. They ripen in the fall. They get harvested in the fall. And how old do you think those apples are by the time it gets to be February or March or June or August?
The word cardboard comes to mind.
Yeah.
It may taste good because it still has the sugars in it. But, you know, the enzymes and stuff that you need, that your body needs for inflammation and all this other stuff, it just isn't there anymore.
It just isn't there, no. No,
so
and
that's
so people,
why I love fermentation, because it's a solution to that. It keeps you alive, and you can keep making it. I mean, you can take a food that's relatively unalive and ferment it if you add cultures to it. You know, there are professional cultures that you can purchase online and add it, and it will, because of the microbes, it will come alive again. It's amazing how it restores the value of
food.
It's
like it refreshes it and restores it, and now a food again.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Powerful.
Yeah. Very powerful stuff. Okay, so tell us quickly, because we only have about 1 minute left. What are some of the medical problems that are improved by eating fermented foods?
Oh, man, this is incredible. In Russia, they've been using this stuff called kumis that handles tuberculosis. And some of the substances in fermented foods are protective against developing cancer. In fact, kombucha, this is historical fact, was that Ronald Reagan, while he was in the office of president, actually had stomach cancer, which he handled with kombucha tea because he knew this guy named Solzhenitsyn, who was a peace medal winner.
I remember that.
And he had saved himself from cancer when he was in the gulag, you know, in jail, stuffed him away the Communist Party. So, you know, this stuff is powerful because it acts against pathogenic bacteria, and it just it improves the immune system. So just about any physical problem that you might have would be improved by taking this stuff.
We need to go to break. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Dad, and my guest today is Diane Dierks. We're talking about fermented foods, and when we come back, we're going to be talking about the vegetables that are available now for fermenting and how you can do it. We'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Food Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Gadd, and my guest today is Diane Dierks. I have her on as a regular guest because she addresses problems of daily life with solutions based in nature, one of my favorite subjects. And she has a website called The Garden Lady of GA, like Georgia, The Garden Lady of GA .wordpress.com. And you can go there and find, she has a booklet about making kombucha tea and other interesting information about gardening and natural living. So, Diane, tell us now, what can we ferment now at this point in the year?
Okay, well, you know, we did a show recently about vitamin D3 and its relationship to vitamin K2. And I was rereading my notes here, and I went, oh, my goodness, all the same vegetables are growing now. They're cool-weather vegetables, and they're all not only fabulous for fermenting, because many of them carry the natural microbes on their leaves, which cause fermenting, but they're also very high in vitamin K, so especially K2. So those would be all the cabbage family, like cauliflower and turnip greens, broccoli, bok choy, kale, especially kale, very high, turnip greens, and then spinach and Swiss chard, arugula, lettuces, a lot of the greens on beets and things like that, and then some of the weeds that you're pulling out of your garden and grumbling, henbit, chickweed, and I ferment those, by the way. They're fabulous. Also, garlic.
Oh, wait, let me ask you a question, as long as you just said that. So chickweed, I know chickweed, I don't have it here in Florida, but I had lots of it in California, and I was putting it in my salad all the time. It's very edible and very delicious, but it's like a lettuce. It's just very flimsy. What happens when you ferment it?
You chop it up. I mean, and you have to mix it, because it will get kind of limp, but you mix it in with other stiffer things like carrots and stuff, and it just sits there and does its thing. I mean, you know, if you eat kimchi, which is another very highly used type of fermented vegetable, it's kind of limp, you know. You want it, it's not the same as pickles. Pickles are more crunchy, tend to be more crunchy,
right.
But
well,
they're just tasty. I mean, you just eat them.
I would just imagine that they would just kind of disintegrate just because they're so delicate. I guess is my question. Kimchi is made of cabbage, and so it has a more substantial leaf.
Well, you don't use as many, you don't use large amounts of it. You want it for the trace minerals and stuff. So you're not huge amounts in there. You're just adding it into the, all the other stuff that you're putting in there. And I like to put a lot of different things in. I like to be creative. I just made one that recently that had, cauliflower and carrots and, henbit and, chickweed and a couple of other kale, so stuff from my garden. You know, this is the cool weather time of year, so a lot of those things are just growing in my garden right now.
You know, my idea when I think about fermenting vegetables is I think about making pickles, because I started with pickles, and also because I started, as I said at the beginning of the show, with my Armenian pickles. When I think about pickles, I think, okay, I'm going to make cucumber pickles. And then if I want to ferment something else, I think I'm going to ferment, you know, green beans or something. I don't think of it as a mix like you're talking about here. But that's very traditional. Like if you think of Italian giardiniera, or I remember one of my favorite things when I was a kid was, I think it's called sweet mixed pickles. And it's got, you know, little baby onions and cucumbers and cauliflower and red peppers and all those things in the jar with a lot of sugar to make sweet pickles. But you could easily, like, have that kind of vegetable mixture and have it be whatever you want and have that be a condiment that you just eat with your meals.
Right. It's basically you go out in your garden with a basket and you pick whatever's there and you ferment it. I mean, it doesn't have to be complex.
Because you have 90 acres or something.
No, I mean, a quart at a time. And you never know what it's going to be. That's like one of, I don't know about you, but I like a variety of food and flavors.
I do too.
And that's one of the things that pickles and fermenting can give you, is a lot of variety.
Well, another thing,
we should talk about how to make it, though.
We will in a second. I just want to say this. Okay. Another thing that I think of is that, you know, like I'm just one person eating and I go to the store and I buy, they sell things in bunches. And so sometimes I don't eat the whole bunch before it, you know, starts getting breaking down.
Right.
Because it's exposed to air. And it just seems to me like, that a good way to use some of those extra vegetables is to just ferment them before they start going bad.
Perfect. Exactly right.
But that's certainly something I could do now that I'm thinking of this. I could just say, okay, after the, you know, before they start being not so good, I can just toss them in a jar.
Right.
So tell us how to do this now. So I've got some vegetables sitting in my refrigerator. What should I do?
Well, you chop them up. Massage them a little bit. Some people use a mortar and pestle and kind of grind them a little bit. If you're going to make sauerkraut, stuff like that, they say to do that. But you want to break some down of the cellulose and the cell structure a little bit so that it is released. And then you add some salt and some water, and then you put it in a glass jar or like you had a crock for your Armenian stuff. And then you make sure that all the vegetables are under the water. And then you just put them on the counter, you know, put a lid on it and leave it on the counter for, you know, two days to 2 weeks, you know, depending on what it is. Like kombucha, I like to wait until it's about 7 days old. With kombucha and water kefir, because it's so alive, you can't cover it with a solid lid. You have to put cloth over the top. But for things like fermented vegetables, you put a lid on it. And then every once in a while you release it because a little carbon dioxide will form, but, you know, so the pressure isn't too great. And then you just taste it after a couple days and see how it is. And if you want to add a little sugar, you can, but mostly it's salt. And sometimes if it's like vegetables from the grocery store that are pretty dead, you'll want to add some kind of a culture to it. You can buy cultures online, or you can use some old pickle juice, or you can use some earlier sauerkraut juice. You just want those microbes. But if you get it out of the garden, you don't have to, because I don't know if you've ever noticed that cabbages, they have sort of a white, kind of a misty covering on them. Those are the microbes. And also with grapes, that kind of a patina on them that's light colored, you know, Those are the microbes.
Yeah.
So they're right there.
And so you could just get a little bunch of grapes at the store and toss them in, and that would give you microbes.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. It depends on what you're trying to create. If you're trying to do cheese, you know, people get very sophisticated about the microbes that they use for cheese and also for wine. But,
but we're not making cheese and wine. We're making fermented vegetables.
Right. And you can also make, take grapes or cabbage and stuff and soak it in a little sugar water and then put it with some flour and make sourdough starter. And that's, in fact, grains have this covering on them that makes them sort of undigestible until they're soaked or fermented. And it used to be that people never ate grains unless it was fermented with some sourdough. That's where sourdough came from. It was a way to break down those chemicals.
So if we're eating something like a lot of people think that we should be eating whole grains, well, whole grains that's not fermented, and it's got the husks on them and all those things. How much of that is digestible?
Right. They need to be fermented to break that down. I think a lot of this stuff with celiac is actually a combination of the fact that the grains have been so hybridized that they're hardly recognized as food anymore. Or some of them are GMO, which we've talked about before. But also, there's this aspect of these chemicals on those grains which keep them from breaking down in storage. Allow them to sit in the ground for a long period of time until they're exposed to the right conditions so that they will germinate. And those things act against your digestive process so that you're not getting the full benefit of those grains. But if you ferment them with a fermentation process like sourdough, then it starts breaking down the cellulose and the chemicals around the grain that keep it from, you know, germinating, and all the other things in there that are preventing it from being really food, and voila, you have real food, you know, really food.
So bread is much more nutritious than eating whole grains that haven't been fermented. I hadn't really thought of that way before at all.
Yeah.
If it's properly, if it's sourdough bread. Not necessarily. Yeah. Well, would yeast bread be the same?
Yeah, yeast is a type. Yeah, yeast is part of it. Is it a microbe?
Right, right. Interesting, interesting. Well, you see, people in the past knew what they were doing. It's like they figured things out. That a lot of times you look at this. I mean, they didn't have all of our modern technology. So, I'm looking at the clock. We've only got 10 seconds left. Well, thank you so much, Diane, for being with us.
Always a pleasure. I always enjoy the show. And I'm very happy I can share this with Pete because I get so passionate and so excited that sometimes lose my words because I'm going, oh, goodness, I can talk
Bye.
About this.
You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd. Be well.